Hello and welcome to this week's On The Box. As always, we are talking everything TV, and I am Andy. Well, I am today, I am every day, I am right now. And I'm with two other really familiar faces. Well, I say familiar faces, I can't actually see them, but...
We're so familiar...
This is where they speak.
Yeah, we're so familiar you can define us by touch, can you? I'm Rob.
Rob's case probably smell.
Oi, oi, I'll have you know, I don't smell like that remark.
I'm Andrew.
Yes, he's the funny one, as you can probably tell.
I certainly try.
Yes.
Oh, that's right, I was going to do a blurb, wasn't I?
Yes.
I remember that. I know what I'm doing. Hundreds of podcasts, I'm great at this. Forgotten what the blurb is. Oh. We are a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. You can find us online at thegeekshow.co.uk. Well, if you want to help us do what we do, you can donate on the right-hand side of the website or visit the Geek Shop where there's lots of the items that you can buy. And you can also listen to all our old shows, as well as a bunch of other shows like Cinema Eclectica and Literary Loitering, and even the Geek Show itself.
Yes. So, shall we get into the news?
Nah.
I think we shall.
Let's just take the day off, take a nap.
Okay.
I said take a nap, not open a lumber mill.
All right, we're going to start off with one of the toughest men in UFC, Mr. Conor McGregor. He's basically a badass, and he's hanging up his UFC gloves and leaving the octagon behind. And you mentioned it before that he might be in talks with WWE, but I think this one's more interesting. He may be playing a role in Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
I'm not sure what this role's going to be, but it will probably involve hitting people. Just
Wouldn't
a wild
be great
guess.
Though, if it was like a scholar at the Citadel or something.
See, that would be amazing. But then again, Conor McGregor has a really strong Irish accent, and that would just be... It would just be the most beautiful thing if he starts getting really philosophical, but he's built like a brick outhouse or a Brexit house, as I call it.
Does it say minor role or just a role?
Just a mysterious role. So we don't know if it's minor or major.
What if it's the Mad King? Or has he been cast yet?
Maybe. That's an interesting thought.
That would be hilarious.
Well, except I'm pretty sure like the Mad King is supposed to be quite old and also not built like he could just tear a guy's head straight off.
Yeah, but you remember him, though. They can look back in time on this show now.
Okay, I haven't watched seasons...
Let's just travel back in time to when the Mad King was totally ripped. Conor McGregor's actually everyone in the past.
Well, everyone just looks like Conor McGregor, even the women.
There's another what's it called moment.
No, I've got it. We flashed back to the end of season 6.
Yeah.
Well, like a young Ned Stark has found his dying sister, and she says, "Promise me, Ned." And slowly he picks up the baby Jon Snow, looks at its face, and it's Conor McGregor.
Possibly, or I can't remember. Oh. It was that, I can't remember which Doctor Who episode it was. I think it was the one with David Tennant where they were trying to change everyone in the world into this one person.
Oh, no. Being John Malkovich all over again.
No, it was...
Being Conor McGregor.
Yeah. No, I think it was John Sim was turning everyone into him. I think it was. You know, when he was the Master.
Oh, yeah, he did do that.
Yeah, and I was just thinking...
Didn't that happen in The Matrix Reloaded?
Yeah, it happened in The Matrix, but it was funnier in Doctor Who. And, well, John Sim's so much better than Keanu Reeves.
I don't get that episode.
Which one?
That Doctor Who episode. Why wouldn't you want everyone to be John Sim?
Well, I'm just thinking that in this case, maybe someone's gone back in time and now everyone's Conor McGregor and you got Khal Drogo going, "Khaleesi, you've changed."
You're so much more rugged than you were before.
You're built for the plains now. It could do. We don't know. Oh, no. I've just had a horrible thought.
Is it that Conor McGregor is the stallion that mounts the world?
No, I'm just thinking of the Lannisters and the, you know, the scene that Bran sees in the tower.
What, were they just both turning out and both Conor McGregor?
Yes. Conor McGregor.
What if they, like, went back to Bran and he's also Conor McGregor, though?
Yes.
You're like some weird fever dream.
Oh, I blame the cheese I had yesterday. This has just gone off on one.
It's all gone a bit Conor McGregor now.
Because I had an even better idea.
What?
It's actually a budget thing, and they're going to just scrap the CGI dragons. Conor McGregor is going to play them instead.
So is he going to run around flapping his arms going, "Rawr!" Like some kid in the playground.
Exactly that, yes.
I was just thinking, what about if the direwolves all had Conor McGregor's beard? Maybe not his face, just his beard.
Then they'd probably have survived a lot longer.
Yep. Although now I'm just imagining the direwolves doing some UFC moves on people attacking them.
Yeah, but apparently, though, you pointed this out, didn't you, Andrew? Wasn't it Snow the direwolf that was cut from a scene because of budgets? How about if it was just cut from a scene because he's gone through a magical spell to turn him into Conor McGregor?
Yes.
Or, just thinking outside the box here, as if we haven't been doing
that. Conor McGregor bounds up to Jon Snow and starts licking him on the face.
just thinking outside the box here, because apparently we haven't been doing that already.
We have to think on the box, Rob.
No. What if Conor McGregor's only role is in, like, key scenes, he just turns up and punches somebody randomly?
Yes.
You know, like a photobomb, only more violent.
And this article that you've saw this in, Rob, it does say role spelled R-O-L-E, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Not role as in...
Just come on and do role.
Yeah, not... Don't. Just Conor McGregor combat rolling all over the place.
Like angry tumbleweed.
Yes. Before he gets up and can you imagine though if his only job was literally combat roll in, punch someone in the face and leave, and that was it, and just, you know, he combat rolls in, punches like Cersei Lannister in the face, and just says sorry about that, and then just walks off, and then the next scene you got what's her face, you know, the mother of dragons. He just combat rolls in, punches a dragon, says sorry about that, and then just walks off.
And then just everyone kind of stares for a second, gets back to the scene.
Yes.
Anyway, so the story was that Conor McGregor's got a role in Game of Thrones, but we don't know what it is yet.
No, but we've speculated.
<It'll> be... that's why people listen.
Yes.
To this on-the-point speculation.
More on-the-point speculation, though. Tom Hardy is going to be reading a CBeebies bedtime story on New Year's Eve, and apparently there are mothers across the country who are excited by this, and we're excited because we're not sure what role Tom Hardy's going to play. Is he going to be playing his most famous role of being Tom Hardy, or is he going to be Mad Max?
I was thinking more Bane.
He could be Bane, he could be Mad Max, he could be Bronson. You know, if he was Bronson, that would be terrifying.
Don't forget Sam Fisher coming up as well.
Yeah, and they got a picture of him with a dog, but we're not ruling out the possibility that it may be Mad Max. Max reading a kid's bedtime story would be interesting.
What story is he reading?
Apparently the story...
And this, children, is how I escaped the Thunderdome.
Yeah. Apparently he's going to be reading a story called You Must Bring a Hat by Simon Phillip and Kate Hindley. The story follows a boy who goes to a party.
See, no, I'm leaning more towards Bronson now.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that.
I can just see Bronson just like scream, "You gotta bring a hat, you gotta bring an effing hat."
Yeah. Yes.
And then just like smashing the book through a table.
I'm not sure. I'm really curious about this because it is Tom Hardy and he's kind of the big thing in movies at the moment, isn't he? Everybody wants him. Including the majority of middle-aged women in the world.
Well, I like how this story is literally Tom Hardy's reading a children's bedtime story.
Yep.
Meanwhile, he's also starring in Taboo, about a revenge-seeking adventurer cannibal serial killer.
No, he likens it to a cannibal
serial killer. That's who he's doing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like, but still, that's an interesting comparison to make.
Yeah, considering he's taking his dog Woodstock with him when he's doing the kids' book, I'm really worried. Woodstock, run! Run! You don't want to be there.
Maybe that's why the child should have worn a hat.
God, yeah, safety hat. I mean, it goes through some of the people who've read kids' stories on New Year's Eve. Damian Lewis is an interesting one, because I think that was right after he did Homeland, wasn't it? David Tennant, Tim Peake.
Yes, because he famously put hidden messages in the story and indoctrinated the children of the nation.
Oh, no, no. The one who people claim did that was Nadia Hussein. Warwick Davies would have been a fun one. James McAvoy and David Hasselhoff.
Oh, the Hoff.
I might have to find this one.
Surely the Hoff was just reading from his own autobiography.
Possibly. His version of You Must Bring a Hat would be interesting. Oh. So, anyway, moving on from there. Onto something a little bit different. You know, Ed Balls was on Strictly Come Dancing. And that is a sentence that I never thought I would ever say.
I had to witness it. And I do use that to... Like, it was very much this horrific Mad Max screaming of, witness me!
Was it a bit Thunderdome on the dance floor?
Two entered, only one left with their spirits intact.
Oh. Well, given Ed Balls had so much fun doing that, he may not have been as successful as maybe he wanted to be, but given how much fun he had, and the fact that his dance partner was, whoever she was attractive and lithe and shapely and everything like that, and all the kind of connotations that a creepy politician would want. Nigel Farage now wants to get in on that action.
Oh.
Well, he wants to try and win something, doesn't he?
Well, apparently it's because of the success of Ed Balls. I'm like, really?
But I thought Nigel Farage was a bit busy with Donald Trump at the minute. Thought they were best friends.
Yeah. Well, Nigel Farage has said that Ed Balls performed brilliantly on the series and proved to be popular with the public and unexpectedly made it through 10 weeks of competition. And Nigel Farage has been a target for I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And he's leaving the door open to showcase his own dance floor talents on next year's show.
Poor woman who has to dance with him. Like, a bit in the first show, there'll be that bit. Because usually, like, they'll call out a dancer's name and they'll kind of fake excitement and run across the stage and give them a big hug. But I think they'll probably have to restructure the show.
Yeah.
So that instead a bunch of hooded figures will emerge and one of them will point to a dancer and say, you were the sacrifice. And she'll cry. She'll scream. She'll grab onto the other dancers and scream, please, no, God, no, why? There's no God here. Well, not anymore. Now that she has to dance with Nigel Farage.
The interesting thing about this article is, a bit further down on the article, there's a picture of Ed Balls sitting there with a top hat and with top and tails, sitting in a white chair, and there are these women dancing around him wearing quite figure-hugging dresses that are quite low-cut. Let's see.
Oh, yep. I found it. Saturday night at the club.
Saturday night at the club. Now, that image there is how I thought all political parties behaved behind closed doors. I thought that was basically, you know, Parliament is closed and they're basically hanging out. They say, I'm going to the club. And I thought this was it. This is basically how it is. They're waited on hand and foot by beautiful women all the time. They're wearing their top hats and everything like that because everybody is a toff.
I mean, yes, except in David Cameron's case, replace beautiful women with pigs.
Political commentary.
There's that joke again.
Biting satire.
Yes. The thing is, I can't imagine Nigel Farage being on Strictly Come Dancing for the simple reason that...
Well, I can imagine him being on I'm a Celebrity.
I can imagine him being on I'm a Celebrity because he, you know, they'd make him do all the punishment games, which is fine. But on Strictly, I'd be looking for every opportunity to trip him up and make him eat the pavement or eat the floor at every opportunity.
Just give every week where he's still on the show, make it the hardest, most dangerous dance that you can.
Do you know the worst part is a lot of the people, a lot of the dancers are actually not from the UK originally.
Ooh.
Yep. Ooh. Yes, you want to go with this. Complicated, isn't it?
Is it going to do? Is his dance going to be the immigration shuffle? Or
oh no, no! I just thought, guys, if he is going to be on, his opening dance has to be The Immigrants. Do you know the song, Andy?
Nope.
No.
You know? Ah.
Oh, you mean The Immigrant song?
Yeah, has to be that.
Not The Immigrants.
Oh well, The Immigrant song. Yeah, has to be that one. What do you think?
I mean, I was thinking about Springtime for Hitler, but sure.
No, I don't think they can do that. I think they'd get taken down quite quickly if they did that one.
Nigel Farage will get taken down quite quickly. And that's what we want.
Then again, they could always do Me and My Shadow, but the version from Time Bandits. You know, the really bad version that the Time Bandits tried doing in Nazi Germany.
Not off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, they're basically there to steal back the map, and they get caught, and they're pretending to be like a song and dance, comedy song and dance troupe, and they're trying to do Me and My Shadow, but it's really bad because they've got no coordination and none of them can sing.
Thanks, Rob. Great.
Yes, I know. Descriptive, aren't I? Anyway, leaving that to one side, let's move on to the final piece of news for this week. The Walking Dead creator, Robert Kirkman, has said that studying the TV show at college is stupid and a waste of time.
We have to clarify, though, but this is America, so college is equal to our university.
Yeah, but that also means that there are college courses for The Walking Dead.
College courses that people have to pay for.
Yes,
and this means you get your degree in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, but the thing is, the American education system is one of the most expensive in the world until ours catches up. And it's... Yes,
but Rob, you have to think as well. Americans have to pay up front for this as well.
Yeah, I know.
So they actually have to pay for it.
But this is... Right. Media studies is considered a Mickey Mouse course at university. And this is something that is even lower than that. Because, I mean, what practical or societal or life applications does it have?
It's basically, I've heard of Mickey Mouse courses. Well, we call them Mickey Mouse courses. This takes Mickey Mouse courses, and this is like, what's another really stupid character?
Another stupid character.
Literally anyone from The Walking Dead.
Yep.
It just takes it to a whole new level.
A whole new Neville. Andrew, what Neville are you this week? I think I'm Neville 1.
Oh, I'm at least level 3 Neville.
I'm a Neville 3 warrior.
Remember, if you get enough XP, you can Neville up.
Yes. What Neville does this elevator go to? Oh, sorry, Andy. But it was just too beautiful a moment.
Oh, hang on. What was I saying?
We were talking about The Walking Dead. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, we were.
Well, let's examine this. Let's break it down a little bit, right? The Walking Dead is a comic book based on the idea of a zombie apocalypse, yeah?
Yeah.
But what are the actual chances of that happening in reality?
Yeah, but what if it actually did happen, and then we're all seemingly stupid then, aren't we?
Well, no, because these days, everyone has their do's and don'ts in a zombie apocalypse, and a lot of people nick them from Zombieland because it had some good advice. Never investigate the bathroom, always double tap, Always make sure that they're actually dead, you know?
And do plenty of cardio.
Yeah, and do plenty of cardio. Also, if you drop your keys, don't try and pick them up straight away. Run in a big circle, you know, because they'll follow you. Pick your keys up on the way back. Then you
don't forget as well, always carry green, blue and red herbs because, remember, plants have healing powers.
Yeah, it depends on which green, blue and red herbs because you know that people...
To be fair, I think if you get bit by a zombie and you light up some green herb, then everything's fine.
Green herb makes everything better, does it? Oh,
I've just got an image of Snoop Dogg with just holding in his hand the Resident Evil multicolored herbs.
He wouldn't hold it; he'd smoke it. You know this.
Yes, but we're not allowed to imply that.
True, true, true. Well, we're not implying. I said it outright. There's no implication. This is Snoop Dogg we're talking about. Anyway, does anyone else have anything to say about the Walking Dead college courses?
I mean, I think it's quite useful.
Really?
I think there's nothing like watching loads of The Walking Dead to get you used to how inherently disappointing life is.
Oh my God, I've just realised. They are going to effectively brainwash them by making them watch it repeatedly, aren't they?
Or read the comic. You have to reference it, Rob. You know, you have to, like, your modules would be like Zombie 101 and Negan Studies and... Or be just
you have to, like,
season.
Site-specific issues in the annotations.
You'll have to, won't you? If it's a university or college-level course, it'll have to be.
Can you imagine the dissertation? Just how grimy is Rick Grimes? And having to work it out using maths.
In Kirkman et al.'s influential study.
Yes. But you have to work it out based on how many times Rick Grimes has actually had a wash in The Walking Dead, in the comics and the TV series and the video games. You have to work out based on all of those. How grimy is Rick Grimes?
Quantum mechanics as explained by is Carl in the house or not?
Is that Schrodinger's Carl? And there's
except
our rep-
it's much easier because he's never in the house.
Or should anybody an investigation into the parental the parental skills of Rick Grimes and whether social services should be called in because that baby in the TV series is always alone.
No. The parental skills.
He gave a firearm to a child.
Yeah. The parental skills of everybody in The Walking Dead, because don't forget that, what's her face, lost her daughter. And then.
Oh, yeah. Carol for like an entire series.
Yeah. Her daughter went missing for like an entire series. You're like, okay, yeah, she's obviously dead if you can't find her.
God. Oh. You'd have to study Series 2 of The Walking Dead.
Yep.
Hmm.
Oof.
The other thing that bugs me about this as well, right? If you know...
Actually, no, no, that's another useful skill you get from the course.
Oh?
You'll easily be able to work a tedious office job.
True.
Because it's nothing compared to just watching countless hours of staring into fields yelling, Sophia, you over here? No.
Ah. I've just had a thought. You know, Where's Waldo or Where's Wally? Remember those books? Mm. If you had pages and pages of just Where's Sophia and she's not on any of the pages, even though the pages might be crowded with stuff, until you get to the very end and it's a pop-up of Sophia going, rah! See, that'd be interesting. And there's my idea for a Where's Sophia book.
That would actually be kind of great.
Yep.
It'll sell.
I have some good ideas, you know. Not many. Even I'm willing to admit that. The thing that bugs me...
Lots of ravages, isn't it? If you just keep talking, Rob, eventually something you say will be useful.
Yeah, I am the monkey. and eventually I will Shakespeare.
Rob, Andrew.
Yes?
Guys.
Yes?
You have to remember as well, it says in this same article that there's no zombies in The Walking Dead. They're not called zombies.
They're called walkers.
You said it's set in a fictional universe where zombie fiction doesn't exist. So nobody has seen, like, any Dawn of the Dead or anything like that.
Yeah.
So you can't even reference that.
Well, there's two things I want to bring up here about The Walking Dead. Even if you don't have zombie fiction or anything like that, you would realize very quickly that blowing the head off or cutting off the head is basically how you stop them, yeah? And if that's the case, then it becomes a very, very simple proposition, and humanity would basically win. Just arm everybody with swords. Works for Michonne, doesn't it?
That's true.
Yeah, if everybody's carrying a sword as a backup weapon, in addition to their guns, or a machete or something like that, something that can basically take the head clean off, yeah? Doesn't matter how many of them are around you, you basically take it in waves. They used to call it like a wave charge formation. You basically take it in turn, so three people move forward, hack, move to the back. Then three people move forward, hack, move to the back. And you basically just keep going like that. And you can pretty much do that for as long as you need to. Eventually the zombies just aren't there anymore. So people have the ability to win against zombies. Zombie apocalypse isn't really that much to deal with unless you're by yourself and surrounded by 1,000 of them.
That's true.
But the other thing I also want to bring up is, when I first heard they were called walkers, my immediate thought was Crisps and Gary Lineker. And I had the horrible thought that The Walking Dead, that all of the zombies, because they are, I had the horrible thought that everyone was being chased by dead Gary Lineker. Or undead Gary Lineker, I should say.
Oh, no. I'm never going to look at a zombie the same again.
And that's my thoughts on The Walking Dead.
I mean, does it sound exactly like a Walker's Crisp advert? That, like, someone opens a packet and then all the Gary Lineker's rise from the ground, going to mob them.
Yep.
Yeah, but you could have a clip from, like, let's say Walking Dead, and then Rick Grimes just goes, "Ooh, Walkers." And then all of a sudden, the bag of cheese and onion just rebounds off the back of his head.
That's a point. Rob.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous and stupid.
My what?
Because everyone knows in America they're called Lays.
What?
And that's the one reason why this theory doesn't work.
What's called Lays?
Walker's Crisps.
Are they called Lays in America?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you walk in and say, "Can I have a packet of Lays?"
Yeah.
It sounds like condoms.
Keeping it classy, Rob. Thanks.
Sorry, but they do. So, seriously, they're called Lays in America.
Yeah.
Is it... why?
Just that.
Just brand names.
Got the same flavours and everything like that.
Okay. Okay.
But no, apparently this is important, so we're going to Google this. This is what the subject of our show is going to be.
Googling crisps.
They're not called Lays anymore, but they are Walkers. Said it was rebranded as Smiths in 2004.
Okay.
Yeah.
But still, they are, well, they used to be Walkers in America. Same logo and everything.
Yeah, but basically it's because Pepsi, like, acquired the rights in something, and then someone else acquired the rights.
Oh, there's, they're related brands. They have Frito Lays, Wavy Lays, KC Masterpiece, Lay's Wow Chips, Lay's Stacks, and Walkers.
And how are they spelling Lay's? Is it L-A-Y-S?
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Don't know what to say about that.
Well, wasn't this an exciting segment?
No, I'm just worried that, you know, maybe they called it Lay's in America and they called it Walkers over in the UK because we're a bit more active here.
Oh, it's Smith's in Australia.
Is it? There goes my theory.
I never knew where PepsiCo owned Walkers.
You learn something new every day.
Wikipedia, the educational...
The new thing isn't necessarily interesting, but it's a thing you've learned.
If you ever on a quiz where you can win some money, and that's a question, you'll thank me for it.
Seriously, though, it does sound like a pack of condoms.
No doubt they're going to be really oily crisps as well, because it says Lay's classic potato chips were cooked in hydrogenated oil until 2003. So they're going to be really oil, sitting in oil for 63 years.
Oh, Andy.
But that's the way it's written.
See, that's what you should have come in with. that layers a sound really oily. That's where the innuendo is.
I missed it completely.
It's like being, that sounds like a condom. Yeah. That's just...
And baked layers. They have baked layers, you know, like we have baked Walkers. And they are produced in cheddar, barbecue, sour cream and onion and the original flavours.
Dodd, because now with you, when you said we have baked Walkers, now I've just got a totally different Walking Dead in my head. Just a bunch of zombies with dreads.
So I was thinking about Gary Lineker again, but now dressed as the dude.
Yes, that works as well. The Walkers can't move because of all the smoke. What's with this fog? It's not fog.
Yeah, Rob.
Yeah?
There's a brand of Lay's called Lay's Max. Now that sounds more wrong. Oh, they have a Lay's Natural as well.
I don't want to know anymore because then you're going to start off on the ready salted, the salt and vinegar and the cheese and onion flavours.
No, they've got like a full list. These are Polish flavours.
Polish flavours?
Yeah. There's cheese, green onion, chicken with spices, salted paprika, Andy, hot green
Andy,
peppers.
Andy.
What?
Andy.
I'm only five.
We're recording a show.
Yes.
But I've got another 70 flavours to go through.
Afterwards, Andy.
Oh, well.
Afterwards. Afterwards. Okay.
Do you like books but can't handle too many words? Or prefer comics? Then tune in to the Geek Show's dedicated comic book show, Four Panel.
Now we're going to talk about what we've been watching.
I'm going to start off, and I have been watching Blackish. And I was a bit worried when I saw this on, I think it was E4 it was on. And I was channel hopping and I saw Blackish. What the hell is Blackish? So I flip over and it's an American sitcom. It stars Anthony Anderson and Tracy Ellis Ross. And it's about an African-American family. And they're kind of, I don't know, middle-class African-American family. And it's about the dad who's trying to re-engage with his African-American roots, I suppose. But he succeeds in some areas and he fails in others. And it sounds like a pretty interesting setup, but it's a bit like Meet the Goldbergs, in a sense, in that it's kind of a throwback to... Remember, they used to do a lot of these African-American sitcoms in the 80s. Things like Different Strokes and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And the obvious one being...
Yeah, all those things that people make references to and then I never know what they're talking about.
Well, the obvious one is The Cosby Show. Which I didn't really want to mention because of all the trouble that Bill Cosby's having, because of whatever reasons, which I'm not going to go into. But this is kind of a modernization of that idea.
Oh, no.
What?
I just realized that because of my lack of knowledge of African-American sitcoms,
yeah,
I missed a perfect opportunity to do a What You Talking About, Willis.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I even mentioned...
I apologise to the listeners. I even let you down on this one.
Yeah, I even mentioned Different Strokes as well.
I'm sorry, everyone.
I opened the door for you
so
as well.
Sorry.
So, anyway, Anthony Anderson is playing as Andre Dre Johnson Sr., who's an advertising executive, and he... wants to try and pass on some of the urban culture that he grew up with onto his kids. His wife is Rainbow Bo Johnson, or she's a doctor, and she's a mixed-race surgeon who was raised by hippies, apparently. And then you've got like the kids, Zoe Johnson, who's the 17-year-old daughter, attractive, popular, stylish, everything like that. And she's very kind of apathetic to everything. And it just goes on from there. And you basically have this dysfunctional middle-class African-American family. Think Fresh Prince of Bel-Air without the Fresh Prince, right? It's that kind of family unit. Imagine if you think about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, right? Will Smith kind of helped that show work as a comedy, yeah? Because he was kind of the stranger in a strange land.
And also it was Will Smith, who was just like one of the most charming men on the planet.
Yeah. And it worked. You know, you had his friends like Jazzy Jeff turning up from time to time, and then you had Carlton doing his thing, and that was great. This is kind of like those sorts of shows, you know, The Cosby Show, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, that sort of thing. It seems to be trying to tap into that particular idea of a slightly dysfunctional family, but it's something that I've seen loads of times before and done better. You know, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air actually did it better than Black-ish. Black-ish isn't a bad show. It's just more of a meh show. It's got some good bits, it's got some great bits, and it's got a lot of bits that are just kind of, well, yeah, but whatever.
It's weird. The way you've described it, it kind of almost sounds like it's the spin-off, like a more successful sitcom that never existed.
Yeah.
But what they need is the main character that made it so popular.
Yeah, it is exactly like that. It's exactly how you've described it. It's missing somebody to tie everything together. And Anthony Anderson is fine. Tracy Ellis Ross is fine. They're both great actors. But it just doesn't quite work. Or I should say it doesn't quite work for me. Maybe if I was African-American and had grown up in an urban environment in America, maybe I'd understand it more. Maybe I'd get the references more. Maybe it's just the fact that I'm not that and I grew up in the northeast of England instead. And that's why I said it's a bit like the Goldbergs, because it's very much the Goldbergs being very much the 1980s in America, not the 1980s in northeast England. And I think this kind of falls into that category as well. This is African-Americans very much aimed at parodying to a degree, making fun of to a degree, the people who want to get back in touch with their roots, especially if they are African-American. But if they'd just done it as a straight-up dysfunctional family comedy, maybe they would have actually had more things that I found amusing or entertaining. If they did it more, say, as Malcolm in the Middle, or Everybody Hates Chris, or even here in the UK, 2.4 Children, you know, even stuff like that, then I might have enjoyed it more, you know, because the comedy is something that I can relate to a bit more.
Yeah, but I guess you can't really say that as a criticism, though.
I'm not saying it's a bad show.
It's more just this. It's not a show that's geared towards you.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad show. As I said, if it seems like it's geared specifically for an African-American audience, which is one of the reasons why I'm confused as to why Channel 4 have picked it up. Because it seems to me that somebody at Channel 4 would have seen this. Because we don't get every sitcom that comes out in America. We get the ones that, you know, that the TV networks here in the UK think would work on TV for us.
Yeah, but I think you're giving them too much credit.
Yeah, I think
what they usually go is, that's popular in America, let's bring it over here.
Yeah, I think because it's been popular in America, people think it'd translate well over to the UK, but it doesn't quite work. It's like, you remember Citizen Kane, right?
I like Citizen Kane.
Did we actually talk about Citizen Kane? We didn't get around to it, did we? But I'll do that next on the box. No. But Citizen Kane is a show that really wouldn't sell well in America, you know? I don't think it'd do.
Yeah, because they probably don't have much to relate to about.
Yeah.
Are they Pakistani?
Yeah, they're Pakistani.
Yeah, and they're Pakistani family living in London.
Yeah.
Birmingham.
So, sorry?
Oh, is it Birmingham?
Yeah, because they say it's like Pakistan, but we're more Pakistanis.
Oh, Birmingham then, yeah. sorry.
That's a quote from Mr. Kane.
I know. So the problem is, that might be a quote from Mr. Kane, but that started off as an insult. I know that insult very well. But it's like that. If you took Citizen Kane over to America, it wouldn't do well. This is the same thing. It's done well in America. I don't think it's doing as well over in the UK or here in the UK. And I think it's purely because there are a lot of people who are trying to watch it and just they're not relating to it. It doesn't make it a bad show. It's just a bad choice, I'd say, rather than a bad show. You guys okay with that?
Yeah.
No, I'm offended on a deeply personal level by what you've said.
Why, do you like Blackish?
No, I know, it's just you said, are you guys okay with that?
All right,
I had some kind of personal stake in it.
All right, okay. So anyway, moving on to Andy, I believe.
Yes. Well, we've talked about this show on the show before in the news. I've been watching The Grand Tour on Amazon Prime.
Really? Does Clarkson swear a lot? Does Clarkson swear a lot?
Yes. He doesn't swear a lot, but he insults a lot, swears a lot more than average, I'd say. But the show itself, I've watched the first two episodes. I haven't watched the next two. One release, I think it releases every Friday.
Yeah.
And there's four altogether now. It's basically the first episode. I mean, I really liked it. I thought it was more. The first episode was more car based, and it showed off the budget in the intro. Literally thousands of people, free cars, open desert, that type of thing. And it was your classic Top Gear, but on a high budget.
Yeah.
It introduced a new test track as well. They called it the Ebola Drone. Named after because it's shaped like the Ebola virus, and they have they call it an old woman's house on there, and that they have sheep on the side of the road, and it's just much more on a bigger budget,
including the sheep.
Well, they have a lot of sheep. Anyway, they have the celebrities that don't have celebrities anymore. They have a segment called Conversation Street.
Condensation or conversation?
Wait, it's Conversation Street.
Okay.
It's where celebrities get invited onto the it's usually two or three celebrities on a show, and each one of them get killed off in random ways. So it's not.
See, I was about to joke, and then do they throw a broken pool cue in the middle and say, "One of you survives," but. Yeah, so no, that sounds like that's what happens.
It's like the first one they have on is Jeremy Renner, and he's skydiving into the studio, and his parachute doesn't open, so he falls flat on his face. But it's hilarious.
And when you say skydiving, we're talking out of a plane.
Yeah.
And his parachute doesn't open.
Yeah, it's a stunt, obviously, but it's all done for really funny means. But the whole idea of the show, though, it's just basically free. It says midlife, but older men just having fun. But it's really fun to watch. The second episode even puts three guns in the hand and sends them onto a troop training, like, you know, anti-terrorism operation.
Okay.
And it's all set up, you can tell. But the rule is that every time they get shot and one of them dies, you have to start all the way from the beginning. So you get this full 20-minute sequence of them restarting at different stages, but it's hilarious, and I do recommend give the second episode a watch if you're not too keen on the idea of the show. And Rob, you might actually find it funny.
I noticed the operative word there was might.
Well, it depends. If you laugh at things that you'll just, you know, you're just meant to laugh at, it's just a fun show.
Who are you to tell me what to laugh at and what not to laugh at?
But I do recommend if you can watch at least the second episode.
If someone says, this is funny.
Yeah.
I do have to say, though, Rob,
yeah.
I haven't watched this episode yet, but the first episode is filmed in Los Angeles. I think it's Los Angeles. It's in America.
America's a big place, Andy.
I mean, I think it's Los Angeles. I think it's California. So it's around about there. Right. Second episode is in Johannesburg in Africa.
Okay. South Africa. Third
episode is in Whitby.
Which is in England.
I noticed they're picking the most exotic places on the planet.
I haven't got the Whitby episode yet, but I'll have to watch it just because it's in Whitby.
Maybe they shot it in Whippy because they'd used their budget on the first two episodes.
just all the episodes could get like gradually less glamorous until the series finale set in Scunthorpe.
Episode 4 is Bognor Regis.
I think the last one set in somewhere in Scotland.
Oh, I was going to say Western Superman. It has to be. Okay, so the Grand Tour. You're enjoying it then, I take it?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'll have to watch the next two episodes. But, yeah. And yeah, I think it's the last episode that finishes up in Scotland.
Okay. Could be interesting. I might give it a try.
Recommend it.
Cool. So anyway, Andrew then.
Yep, on to me. And I've been watching a lovely bit of Planet Earth too.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. Everyone's favourite national treasure, David Attenborough, is back with some more lovely nature. And I think this time, so far, he's gone to islands. I think deserts was one. Most recent one was grasslands. Other places. But, you know, it's pretty much the classic Attenborough of here's a place, here are some amazing shots of animals doing some crazy things. Like in one episode, you can see a bobcat go hunting. And it's just the most ridiculous thing. And the idea is it hunts things that are underground.
Yeah.
So it's just like slowly padding along. But because it doesn't want to like give itself away by vibrations, suddenly it'll just like lunge up, just like face plant into a giant pile of snow. But just the sight of just watching a cat like majestically fly through the air and then just go, whoop, it made my evening.
See, that sounds like something that should be a GIF. You know, it should be an intimate internet meme when you get right down to it, shouldn't it?
It's like the most internet thing ever because it's a cat being adorably clumsy.
Yep. See? Oh my God, I think the world's going to end. I've had two good ideas in one episode.
These are the end times.
Yes, I've had two good ideas in one episode.
It's great. And like in the most recent episode, which was Grasslands.
Yeah.
There were these birds. I think they're called like widow birds. And they've got these giant tail. They basically look a bit like chickens with like these giant tail feathers coming off the back.
Yeah.
And like they show off their feathers to get potential mates. But the female birds will sit on top of a tree branch. But the birds, they're stuck on the ground, surrounded by tall grass. So how do they get their mate's attention, Rob?
I don't know.
But what they do is, much like Pokemon, jump out the grass. Like, not fly. Not fly like you think birds would do.
Yeah.
But just sort of jump, awkwardly waddle in the air for a second, and fall back down to earth.
What?
I'm losing the idea of where this show is going and what this show actually is.
Well,
I mean, it's David Attenborough does animals do the craziest things.
Which is the best version of animals do the craziest things.
Well, Attenborough just watches on making really dry comments.
So it's basically like Wogan used to do on Eurovision. Attenborough,
yes,
hosting,
yes,
Eurovision. Attenborough hosting Eurovision. Yeah. Attenborough hosting Eurovision would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Oh my God, it would be.
If he hosted Eurovision as if it was the nature documentary, that would just be brilliant.
Anyway, I do have to put out a warning for one of the episodes of Planet Earth 2.
Oh.
It's the islands episode.
Yeah.
And it does contain scenes of penguins in distress, which I know for a lot of people is emotionally trying, because it's crazy, guys. They live on this island. But there's, like, basically no beaches or anything. It's just, like, all solid cliff faces. So to get through, they have to, like, dive off a cliff and then climb back up it again.
Okay.
You just see, like, literally these penguins, like, waddling back along, just literally covered in blood.
Ooh.
Yes. They are some hardcore penguins.
Ouch.
I don't know what to say at that one.
Yeah, it's a sad, sad scene. Which isn't a sad scene and is awesome.
What?
A jaguar taking down a crocodile.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Because it just kind of like comes and grabs it by the neck and just like drags it out the water.
Wow. I might have to sit down and watch this because these bits sound amazing.
Oh, you should. There's some incredible footage. But I think what else I really love is like at the end of the episodes where they have the diaries.
Yeah.
Because the lengths they go to film these things are pretty much almost as amazing as the things they're filming. Mm. Like, there's one episode where they're filming some hawks, and they actually, like, have a camera that sort of flies along, like ducking and diving on the same path as the hawk goes down. How do you think they filmed that?
They stood on the ground and just made the camera move with the drone.
See, that's what I thought.
Yeah?
No. That was a man holding a camera attached to another man on a hang glider.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah. Like just parasailing down a mountain surrounded by hawks.
Do you know, if you could be a cameraman on the Planet Earth documentaries, that would be like the greatest cameraman job ever in TV.
Well, yes and no. Because then there's also like the guy who has to spend 5 days in a grass shack surrounded by tigers.
True.
Because they set up automatic cameras and the tigers ate them.
Yeah, but you have to think, out of all the dangerous situations, you have to feel for that either team or that one man that has to sit and do the safety assessment for that.
Oof.
Because that's a lot of paperwork.
I don't know how to follow that. I'm a big fan of Attenborough's anyway, and I thought the original Planet Earth series was amazing.
Mm. This is the one where they get literally as up close with things as they can, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of the whole point of just closer than like any other nature documentary gets.
I don't know what to say about that then, Andrew. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, you should. It's really good. Like if you like your nature documentaries, this is a must-see.
Well, it's weird, because normally I'm the one with documentaries and cooking shows and stuff like that, but this week it's you.
Well, I don't watch that many documentaries, but Attenborough is always one of those things I will make time for.
Yeah. The thing is, he's got such class about him.
He does, and I think I love the way he can anthropomorphize the animals a bit.
Yeah.
But to a degree where it's clear these are still animals, but this is why you should care about them.
It's not the creepy
that's
anime.
What annoys me about a lot of nature documentaries is they'll be kind of, oh, and look, this is like the mummy meerkat, and here are the children she loves. It's like, that's not how the animal thinks like.
This is true.
And like the Ambert, he gets how to be on that line between emotive but without trying to give like animals human emotions.
Yeah. I think I'm going to have to sit down and watch this. It sounds really good. I've been avoiding watching it for a while, mainly because, you know, I don't have power over the TV. I'd have to watch it on my on iPlayer or something like that. And the speakers aren't as good on that. So I wanted to watch it on TV, but I can't.
That is a sad life you lead.
Yeah.
Truly first world problems are the most harrowing.
I think that's it for today's show, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I was last.
Yes. So,
basically, thinking about why you didn't start talking about what you've been watching, Rob. That's because you already have.
Yes. So, I
am not on the ball today.
Yeah. We are at the end of the show, so we're going to leave you for another week. If you want to contact us about being on a show, or you want to get involved in some way, or you just want to ask us a question, then get in touch with us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, my enemy list, or various other places on the internet. All of our shows are available on Mixcloud, YouTube, and iTunes. And, just look for us on the internet. We are The Geek Show. If you type it in, yes, you'll find
us. Just like I didn't say in the blurb.
Yes. So, without further ado, then, I have been Rob.
I've been Andy.
And I've been a shambling mess.
We'll see you all next time.
Thanks for listening.